The speaker for the second hour is Lynn. She's from the UK, and I'm going to lovingly crosstalk here and say that Lynn has made amazing progress since she's been here in the meeting. She came in not in on the wings of victory. She was feeling down, and like many of us do. And by coming to these meetings and talking and doing service, she's in a very, very different place. And the floor is now yours, Lynn. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Phil, for the introduction. I'm Lynn. I'm living with depression, and I'm so grateful to be able to talk to share my experience today. I hope everybody can hear me okay. My voice tends to get a bit hoarse sometimes, but I trust that I'll be able to say what needs to be said. I am incredibly grateful to DA. I have been coming since June of last year, so what, 15 months? And I've done a little mind map here for myself, and it was like, yeah, there's just so much to say. Kind of how did I find DA? I mean, I hadn't even heard of DA. I didn't know what it was. And last year I was working steps with my sponsor in another fellowship, and she mentioned it in passing. And I kind of didn't think I needed it, and as higher power works, probably a month or 2 months later, I went to a charity walk with colleagues from work who I hadn't seen in years. And I used to be the absolute social butterfly at work. Like, I had so much energy, and I was always chatting to everybody, and that was who I was. And I just wasn't that person last year. My energy levels kind of dipped, and I was really feeling quite self-conscious about myself. And I suppose I was changing because I'm getting older. And something happened, and I just couldn't put a happy face on it anymore. And I turned up to this charity walk, which is a 15-minute walk from here, and I realized that I couldn't stay. And I came home, and I turned to DA because I'm in other fellowships, and I knew, like, my reaction now is whenever I notice that there's something that's not just a character defect that I can hand to my higher power and ask my higher power to release me through, not a couple of meetings exactly, but there's a difference between a character defect that is something that I do that's maybe something I'd like to change versus a character defect that is so entrenched that I need a whole fellowship for it. And I just remember thinking I couldn't put a happy face on it. I felt like lead. I turned up and I was like, "Hi, I'm Lynn. I'm living with depression. Yeah, I need help." And I was already in therapy. Like I said, I was already in other 12-step programs. And I remember thinking, what I like about 12-step programs is this idea that my higher power loves me with my depression. Like, I don't have to pretend that I don't have depression. This is part of who I am, where I am, and that makes it okay. I am okay as I am. And it took me a couple more weeks before I realized that I needed medication, because I got to the point where, like, I love doing jigsaw puzzles, and I didn't have a lot of energy last year, and definitely last year that was emotional. But I was still kind of able to do things. I was able to drag myself out of bed, and I was still able to work, and I was still able to push myself to do things. But things got grayer and grayer and grayer. And when I found myself sat on my sofa with my coffee table over here and my jigsaw puzzles, and I couldn't even pick up a jigsaw puzzle to just do some puzzles, I remember thinking, okay, that's not a good sign. Like, that is just not where I want to be. And I realized that I was feeling really low. Went to a conference down by the seaside with some friends, and normally that would totally cheer me up, and everything was just great, and I was just crying. And so I finally gave in and was like, right, I've tried absolutely everything. Went to my doctor, said, I'd just been diagnosed again with ADHD, because I have ADHD, and I was diagnosed in my 30s. And I thought I'd dealt with all of that, but I didn't have the paperwork. So I went through the process again last year, and in a way, it was kind of like a step four sort of process of really getting to know myself all over again. And I thought, okay, I've got two options here. I can have medication for ADHD, or I can have medication for depression, but I need something. I can't do this alone anymore. I've exhausted all of my own efforts. And I decided that I'd give an antidepressant a try. And I walked in, and higher power sent me a doctor who totally listened, trusted, believed me. And when I said, look, I just want to start on something today, they gave me something on the day. And it took a while before I found the right one. And I'm on a very, very, very low dose, but it's just enough to keep the air in the tires. It's just enough to give me enough energy to be able to move forward. I often think of myself like a sort of one of those old-fashioned aeroplanes where you have to crank the propeller to get it started. I can crank the propeller and I've got gas in the tank, but if there's no air in the tires, the plane is not going to move forward. And if it's not going to move forward, it's definitely not going to fly. So that was a really important thing for me. And an important part of my recovery has been really understanding my background, particularly childhood and teenage sort of experience and self. And I think looking back, I must have been depressed by age 12, because when I was on the way to the pharmacist to go and collect the medication that day, I remember thinking my therapist was away for a couple of weeks, and I was really struggling. And I remember feeling in that moment that was higher power that had led me to that part of the process, because I was on the way there and I could visualize myself tucking my 12-year-old self into bed and saying, you're not well, you get better, I've got this. And that is sort of a way that my higher power has helped me with my recovery, is this idea of I'm learning to reparent myself. I'm learning to reparent my 5-year-old self, and I'm learning to reparent my 12-year-old self. And I'm learning to do that in a way that I didn't receive growing up. My parents, I love my parents, but my parents are dysfunctional. They both have, they both have their own trauma issues, which I think as I get older, I kind of understand a bit more. But my father began drinking when I was 12, and my mom was depressed and never did anything about it, probably an overeater as well. And I certainly I didn't fit in at school, so I really didn't have anywhere where I felt like I was just accepted for who I was. And looking back now to realize that as a child, I didn't even know I was neurodivergent, and so I was different anyway. That all just makes so much sense now, to be able to say, well, no wonder by 12 I was depressed, because by 5 I must have realized I was different, and trying to figure out how to make myself acceptable to everybody. And by 12, like nothing had changed and nothing was going to change. And so that kind of tucking that 12-year-old self into bed and saying, you get better, you sort of sleep, rest, do whatever you need, I'm going to carry on living life, was a really big thing for me. And and this is where I was like, oh, it's all sort of muddled up in my head. But I came to recovery and fellowship 10 years ago, because I started out trying to understand growing up in an alcoholic family. And that was a really important part of my recovery, because I needed to understand how I'd grown up trying to stop my dad from his drinking and feeling responsible for it. I recognize now isn't my responsibility, wasn't my responsibility. And I did the steps in that fellowship, and I had a sponsor who gave me a lot of support, was really wonderful. And we got to step 8, which was about making amends. And I was like, I don't have amends to make. I'm the victim here. Like, it's not me. And it was around about there that I realized that I wasn't just harmed. I was harming other people through my various things. It started out recognizing it was work and it was codependency, Then it was my cluttering, because I, even as I talk to you now, I'm slightly ashamed to admit, no, not ashamed, I'm embarrassed to admit that my flat is not as tidy as I would have liked it to have been for the session. But the difference between having come to DA for all of this time and finding more self-acceptance is that I don't feel shame about this. I feel embarrassment. I don't feel like this is hopeless and I can never change it. This is sort of something that doesn't make me a bad person. It's something that I'm struggling with, but it's something that is possible to change. And I honestly don't think even a year ago I would have been able to say, I'm embarrassed. It would have been, oh, I'm so ashamed. I'm such a bad person. And then I'd get caught in the spiral of the negative thinking and the depressed thinking. It's like, oh, well, I can't do this and I can't do that. And my negative self-talk has been a really eye-opening experience over the years of recovery to notice and really become to see just how incredibly unkind I've been to myself. And people have said it. They've said it for years. People meet with us within 5 minutes. They're like, wow, you're hard on yourself. And that's fine, but I read every self-help book I could find before I got into recovery. I was constantly trying to change myself, but I didn't have the idea of changing myself because I wanted to change myself. It was always out of fear. It was always about needed to be better, needed to be working harder, needed to be different, needed to be absolutely anybody or anything other than what I was. And so when I couldn't move on to step eight with my sponsor, all those years ago, I had to admit that at that point, I was not just the victim. Like, I was not taking responsibility for myself. And in fact, I went to an open AA meeting and I sat in the meeting sort of being like, I'm here to understand my parents, not nothing to do with me. And I related so much to the emotional pain. And when I walked away from that meeting, I'm thinking, wow, okay, I really resonated with that. But why is it? Because I don't drink. I was like, oh. And higher power tapped me on the shoulder and was like, do you think you might be a workaholic? And I'd been joking for years that I was a workaholic, but I'd never admitted it up until that point. And, you know, I used to have the energy to manage all of that. Like, I could cover up with so much with all of the energy and the adrenaline. Last year, that wasn't there anymore, and I couldn't compensate for all of it anymore. And as I recognize now, sort of with the depression, any one of the sort of character defects can become progressive if I don't deal with it. And so the negative self-talk of all of those years, it's understandable that I'd end up in depression. It's understandable I'd reach a point where it was like, but yeah. I don't know how to love myself. I don't know how to accept myself. I don't know how to let other people even be kind to me. You know, I still occasionally find myself crying when people are kind to me because I'm like, wow, I really wasn't expecting that. I felt invisible at home unless I was doing incredibly well, unless I was a superstar, or unless I was in crisis that didn't get attention. Whereas at school, where I wanted to be invisible, I was picked on because I was different. And so over the years and through recovery, I've now come to understand that that just means that I didn't really know what it felt to feel emotionally safe and to feel calm and to feel like I'm okay and it's okay to learn, it's okay to grow, it's okay to make mistakes. I don't have to be perfect. And even as I'm saying it, I kind of feel myself tensing up, being like, no, I don't have to be perfect. But it's okay. I'm allowed to be as I am and where I am. And what happened last year was that I fell asleep at the wheel of my recovery. I didn't do maintenance. I let things build up and I didn't think it mattered until I realized that it did. And so my procrastination really brought me to a point, my not believing that I was worthy of help and support. So I had to tell my employer that I was experiencing the fatigue and that I needed support. And the person who I was talking to in HR just wasn't getting back to me. And I thought it was my fault. And so for weeks and weeks, I was chasing and I was upset about it. But it never occurred to me at any point that it was this other person who wasn't doing their job and that it wasn't my responsibility, because that's what I'd grown up. Like, I grew up thinking it was my fault because my parents weren't able to just see me if I had, I don't know, a cold. It always had to be, I was really, really, really ill and somebody noticed. And so I can see now that the difference between the two things, like in crisis or do being the superstar. And as a child, there's not too much really difference between that. It's kind of possible to do those things. As a grown up, those extremes became more and more and more. And it was never enough to just be okay and to just be in this moment and to be ordinary, I suppose, maybe, you know? I realized that I wasn't taking responsibility for my recovery, and I'd ended up in depression, and I had to keep going. So a huge part of my recovery in DA as well is this realization that I can't change the past. Can't change 5 minutes ago, can't change 20 years ago, can't change 40 years ago, can't change other people. I get kind of get that, but literally I can't change anything that has happened, and really I can't control anything that's about to happen. I can do my best, but I cannot guarantee any outcomes of that. And the thing about past, that's been a difficult one this year, really, to learn that I really, really, really cannot change the past. And I can learn from the past, but ruminating over it and going, oh, I wish I'd done it differently. What if I'd just done that? What if I'd just done this? And like, I get where it comes from now. It comes from this point of when I was growing up, things were happening that were outside of my control that as a child I didn't realize were out of my control. And I went back over and over and over and over again to kind of go, you know, where was the point? Where was the changing point? What could I have done differently? It's like, I couldn't have done anything differently. And also, it wasn't all my responsibility. So, as one of my fellowships said, you know, my trauma is not my fault. My healing is my responsibility. And that's what I'm doing here and now and today. And last year I was really caught up in the self-pity of it. I was really caught up in it. And that was because I couldn't really accept what had happened, and I couldn't accept that it wasn't my fault. I didn't cause it. I couldn't control it. And towards the end of last year, I remember kind of going to pretty much every fellowship I was in and sharing about this intense self-pity and being like, I'm so ready to let this go, but I don't know how. Please, higher power, just please release me from this intense self-pity. And something that I've learned from the various different fellowships now is that I don't get to just ask be relieved of a character defect. I got to do the work. And not only that, my higher power was sending the people, places, and things to put me in a position to build that. So let's say the opposite of that character defect. So with me, with the self-pity last year, and when I say self-pity, it was a case of I just became really, really aware of my parents, particularly my parents, but a lot of childhood things, like the voices. You know, my dad's reaction to things would be he'd get angry and he'd drink, and my mom's reaction would be she would be upset and anxious and overwhelmed. And I had both of those things happen to me, and I realized, I was like, I don't have to repeat these patterns. I don't have to continue allowing this to be the case. I can't stop my first thought, but I can recognize what's happening, and I can make an outreach call. I can journal about it. I can take it to my sponsor in another fellowship. I can pray. I can go for a walk. For me, higher power really talks to me a lot through nature and through music. And particularly when I was in the depth of my depression last year, like people couldn't really get through to me. It was very much a case of, I was listening to sad songs from morning till evening, and I would only go for a walk in the evening. So, the moon and the stars were kind of my companions for some time. And so, like I say, this kind of realization that the self-pity was the big thing that was holding me back, that I was really, really struggling with. So I shared in every meeting that I could. And it was removed from me in a physical way, which is what my higher power often does. Last year, it was through surgery, the growth on my back, and it needed to be removed. And I needed to trust my higher power. And I needed to say, on the day when they said, we can operate today, and I was like, go ahead, do it. Let's just do it. And it somehow that act of trust that just showed me that it really isn't in my timing that my character defects get removed. It's very much in my higher powers. And I really appreciate the step three prayer that we say at the end of every DA meeting, but currently the prayer that's really speaking to me is step seven prayer, which is my creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. Please remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of me being maximum service to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. And so that kind of recognition last year, I was saying, I was asleep at the wheel of my recovery and I was caught up in my self-pity. I was also caught up in a lot of self-will. And I very much had this transactional reaction with my higher power of like, I will do this and then you give me this. And I come to recognize as well that like that's not how it works. And I'm not berating myself for that anymore either. I feel very much as though that's all part of the process of my recovery. My recovery is my recovery, and this is how it's worked out for me. It's like I've gone from one fellowship to another fellowship to another fellowship. And I sort of the order is what my higher power has kind of shown to me. As I say, more will be revealed. And I recognize now that, like I say, I need to do the work, and I need to do the work of changing. I need to do the work of changing my thoughts. I need to do the work of being kinder to myself. And with sort of emotional sobriety has been a thing that I've been wanting for a really long time, and I didn't realize I wanted it until I recognized that my depression is me getting caught up in my sadness and choosing the option that makes me sad and taking the actions or not taking the actions that leave me feeling more sad. And I did a lot of work on my DA recovery last year, and I'm really grateful for that. And then I neglected to deal with my anxiety, and my anxiety got out of balance and out of control, and I was marinating in anxiety when I was recovering from the surgery because I was off work and I was terrified of being off work. I really was so anxious that my manager was going to be angry and disappointed, and I should have been better sooner. And I got completely caught up sort of really ruminating so much and not being able to just allow myself to give myself the space to recover, that I gave myself shingles. And I ended up with a panic attack, and I've never had a panic attack. Like, I don't know if they've actually put it down as a panic attack, but the paramedics were sent over to my apartment on New Year's Eve, and they turned up and my blood pressure was high, and I was just really, really, really anxious. And higher power sent me sort of, like I say, higher power speaks to me through different people, places, and things. And one of the paramedics said to me that, because I said, I'm doing all of this work, and all of these fellowships, and doing therapy, and got the medication, I'm just doing everything I can. And he said to me that the brain was very clever, and that when it had figured out that I had recognized what it was doing, it was approaching it from a different angle. And so it's figuring out what the underlying trauma is. It's like, where does all of this spring from? What is the root cause? And that really was, I think, a turning point in a lot of ways, because I really started to see at that point how my constant anxiety and some of this ne negative self-talk was having a physical impact on me. And I managed to get through in terms of, like, I managed to put on the brakes, and so fortunately the shingles didn't get too bad. But then other things kind of happened and continued to happen. And I have been running on nervous, anxious, restless, angry, anxiety, energy for a couple of months. Even whilst I've been doing like whilst I've been coming to DA, and I've been recognizing that there have been some parts of my life where I've taken good responsibility, and then there have been some parts of my life where I haven't. And this year round, I was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder at the beginning of the year, and I told my employer, and I got approval for training and coaching. And unfortunately, the government department that was supposed to send the report, they didn't send it in the post. It hasn't arrived. And so it's been really difficult to actually get the training and the coaching, even though I'm a valuable employee. I've been working for the company for 16 years. When I was diagnosed with ADHD, I used to give talks on sort of how I discovered that and how I was managing at work. And I've worked really hard to kind of manage myself and to constantly adapt to different things that have been happening. But I, again, powerless here. Like, I can't force somebody to send the report. I can't force HR to contact them and send a complaint. I can't force any of that. But I thought I could. And I was nearing burnout in May when I took 10 days off work, and I took some time to really reconnect with myself and my higher power. And I realized, okay, so I need to change. I cannot keep doing things in the way that I used to, because it just doesn't work anymore. I'm having to put in so much more energy to be able to do what I was able to do before, and it's exhausting me, and it's not going to help. So I try a lot to practice HALT: hungry, angry, lonely, tired. I try really to notice when I'm any one of those things and not let them get too far out of my control. And I came back to work in June, and they said that they were going to find somebody else to provide it. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. You go ahead, you go do that. I'm trying to kind of trust higher power, with step three in that. And still nothing has happened, and nothing has happened, and nothing has happened. And it has got to the point where I really had to accept that. I mean, this may even be higher power's will, in terms of maybe I'm not ready for the training, I don't know. But I really had to acknowledge what is in my power and what's not in my control. And I've also discovered that I have some health issues that mean that I have this the lack of energy. So last year I was struggling with the depression as a result of the sort of the emotional side of things. And this year round, it's been a case of, I literally don't have the energy because I have iron deficiency. But I didn't know I had iron deficiency. And because I was constantly trying to overcome all of this, I've been putting the what's it, pressing the accelerator pedal, trying to move forward when the car is clamped. And those two things, it's not possible. I'm going to burn out the engine if I carry on. So that recognition of, I need to take care of my health so that I'm in the best place I can possibly be, so that I can keep my mind in the best place that it can possibly be. And as well, that I've now got an overactive thyroid, so I do need to notice what I'm feeling, and then to also just to recognize that sort of this new condition is revving my engine. I like there's a lot of adrenaline going on. My anxiety is there. However, I have recovery in my programs, and I can now say, well, hang on a minute. I'm noticing that I'm feeling anxious. I'm noticing that I'm feeling depressed. There's something I can do. I can go to a meeting. I can make an outreach call. I can, I can do, I can do service. I can pray about it. I'm not so good with meditating, but I can do that occasionally. I've certainly found that a little bit more challenging recently because my mind has been racing a bit. But somehow finding out those things when my doctor told me the test results over the various different weeks has just helped me to see myself and to see that I've been working really hard and I've been trying my best. And actually, I couldn't have done more because I physically cannot do more. So going back to the example of the car, I'm doing everything I can, but if the car is clamped, I'm not going to move forward. And I need to take the clamp off first. I need to, what else do I need to do? I need to acknowledge where I'm at, and I need to acknowledge that this is what I can do right now. And that somehow is where this self-acceptance and the kindness and the compassion has just finally started to creep in. And it's been gradual. It's so gradual. But just to suddenly realize that anybody going through this situation would have been finding it quite difficult to kind of keep going and to manage all of those things, rather than to say it's my fault, I'm broken, there's no hope, I can't do anything about this. And I find it really fascinating how when my depression was really bad last year, it got to the point of I don't go away on holiday anymore like I used to. I used to be the person who was like, every couple of months, I'd kind of jump on the train and I'd go down to the seaside or I'd go travel somewhere. And I don't have that anymore because I don't have physical energy to do it. But actually, what my higher power was doing last year in kind of bringing my depression to my notice was making me sit still long enough to be able to notice what I was feeling and to be able to process that and to allow myself to grieve. And I didn't realize that there have definitely been things to grieve. And I've been grieving my health because I'm not the same person I was 6 months or a year ago. And I'm grateful for that. I'm incredibly grateful for that. But at the same time, it's like, who is this new person? And what does my higher power want me to do when I don't have the energy that I used to, or when I'm just not as I wasn't being my true self. I didn't know who my true self was. I've been discovering my true self. And I keep thinking about reparenting myself. I keep thinking as these new health conditions have kind of come up, I keep thinking about how I would treat that in a child or a teenager. And again, like not going based on what I learned growing up, based on what I would do here and now and with the knowledge. And it's been quite the journey. It's been quite the journey, but I take much better care of myself now than I used to, and I'm a lot more accepting. I'm integrating my recovery, so I'm putting it all together now, where before I never was able to. I got to share a the DA meeting a while back, and the thing about 51% living in the solution was that's manageable. I can do that. 51%, it's like that one little extra percent more in the solution than not being in the solution. And because I'm in the various different fellowships, I've had to recognize that I got to a point where it's like higher power saying, I can't keep trying to figure things out in my head. That's not going to work. I've tried it. It's got me here. What I need to do is I need to let it out, and I need to say what's in my head. I need to get it out of my head. Sometimes that's speaking out at a meeting, and other times it's literally just walking out the front door and just being outside with the sky and nature. And it's also about recognizing that the solution is turning to my higher power. So the problem is I'm a workaholic, I'm a codependent, I'm an adult child, I'm a clutterer, I'm powerless over my OCD and my depression and my emotions, all of those things. But actually the solution is I have a higher power right here and right now that loves me. And I've noticed that the more I stay present in this moment, the more I can take actions that are healthier and better, the more I can notice when I'm being pulled into the past or I'm being dragged into the future about some sort of scary thing that may or may not may or may not ever happen. But if it does, it's my higher power's will, and I will be able to handle it. I'm currently in step eight in another fellowship, not the one from the first time round, but with my sponsor in that one. This time round, my step eight is very much about recognizing that I need to put myself on that list. So I've been making amends to myself, to that inner child, inner teenager, and I like to see them as living amends. And my living amends to myself in that way is to keep working my program, and to recognize that I do have these tendencies, and some days I will wake up and I will feel like I don't want to get out of bed, and some days I will get really caught up in my past. But I don't have to do that anymore. And I, that's not my higher power's will for me. My higher power's will for me is not to, for example, with my OCD, like my OCD is not my higher power's will for me. It's not my higher power telling me how to live my life because it doesn't make me happy. So my higher power's will for me is to be happy, joyous, and free. I'm not quite sure I'm quite there yet, but to recognize that the past is over and I can live here and today, and that I do have recovery to give as well. I do love that in the promises about how no matter how far down the scale we have gone, our experience can benefit others. And to, yeah, like I say, to not regret the past from 5 minutes ago or 5 years ago, and to accept that I am exactly where I need to be, and that I'm going to keep trying to get better one day at a time, and I'm going to try and release my past one day at a time. And somehow I'm finally realizing that, like, I just need to do the next right thing. I just need to keep putting one foot in front of the other, and I don't only have to obsessively work my program. There's more to life than that. So for me, it really is about finding that balance. And I think that with that, I'm going to wrap up. I have really, really appreciated the opportunity to share, and thank you so much. And I will keep going back with that.
Thank you very much, Lynn, for sharing your stories. I appreciate you being willing to step up and do service and share. Thank you. Now we will call on people by a show of hands. Given how long we were last time, we're going to start with 3 minutes. And if Lots of hands and time is running out. We're going to drop it to do, but we're going to start with three. Shauna, you're up.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Thank you so much, Lynn. This is Shauna. I'm recovering from depression, gratefully. And there were a lot of parts of your story that I could relate to. When I came into DA, I was suffering greatly from chronic fatigue, and it was affecting me cognitively, and it was affecting my body very much. And I too realized that what I was doing was having an effect on my body, and how I was thinking was having an effect on my body. And for me, a lot of the resentments that I had were having an effect on my body. And then having being in contact with people who were behaving in toxic ways, and staying around those people was having an effect on my body. And it was a beautiful part of DA for me. It was kind of painful I at times looking at this stuff. It did bring me to my knees, but then there's also the transformation and the change of not doing those same things. I'm so grateful that I was able to face what was happening. And as I started taking good care of myself, and I started getting better from the chronic fatigue, and I'm really thankful for that. I'm still taking care of myself. So since I was just on camera for the last chair, I'm off camera for this chair, and I was lying down while I was listening to and that's okay. I'm not ashamed of that anymore. So I just thank you so much, and I will pass.
Thank you, Shauna. The floor is open. Sonia, you're up.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you, Lynn, for your share, your story. It's amazing how much progress you have made in the 1 year you've been in this program. And I certainly relate to what you said about being a workaholic. That was I don't come from an alcoholic home, but I come from a home where there was mental illness with one parent, and I was the one who suffered the most, who was on whom it was targeted, this behavior from this parent, toxic and critical behavior. And so it affected me tremendously with all those negative thoughts that came up continuously, that negative tape throughout my life. And I think until the point of taking care of myself, I seem to have been okay. But once I had a child, it all came up in full force. How am I going to do this? And that's when I became depressed even more. But I had no problem in getting help for myself, and continued to do so. And I admire you for all the steps you've taken to take care of yourself. That is the most important thing for us to do. And yes, when we give service, and I have heard this many times, we help ourselves, definitely. So I know I will continue to give service and get as much help and participate in this program. And I know that I will be better and stronger for it. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Alice, can you drop to 2 minutes, please? Heidi, you are up.
Hi, thank you. Hello,
Nope.
I'm Heidi from Finland, and it's my fourth BA meeting. Fifth. Yeah, fourth. Anyway, beginning. Sorry. I've been working in ACA for the past year. But like my main kind of symptom from the complex and chronic post-traumatic stress is what people usually call depression, or that's the clinical name that doctors give it. But I mean, like, how it manifests in me is like lack of motivation. I can't get things done. On quite many days, I don't even leave the house. And I'm just tired. I mainly lay in bed. And yeah, also anxiety, but mainly this kind of low energy. And then I drink too much coffee to try to compensate that. And then I get anxiety. I've tried all kinds of things. I was 4 years in therapy. I've been 18 years on different kinds of medications. But, let's see if this could help a little. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Heidi, for sharing. Raj, you're going to be our last share. You're up.
Thank you, Lynn, for your great share. And just now I comment in the chat room, even attending the meetings is service. That's a beautiful perspective. And I honestly believe my higher power speaks to me through shares I hear in the DA meetings. And you're reminding me that I cannot change the past. I can learn from it, but not ruminate on it. And there's no place for self-pity. And the one thing you said was beautiful. It's good to depend on your higher power, which loves me. Higher power with a heart. That was a beautiful share. Thank you, Lynn. Thank you. That's my mile
Thank
pass.
you. Thank you. I'm going to end the recording now, as soon as I can, the right window.